welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Crime coming up in this hour. Later on, it's Boston Blackie from 1945. But first, the ever-famous Dragnet. This NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service episode, first heard on May 11th, 1954, called The Big Look.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a woman has been badly beaten. She can't describe her assailant. He's still at large. Your job, find him.
It was Monday, January 14th. It was raining in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 11:47 p.m. when we got to 7982 Oakwood Avenue. Front door.
What is it?
Police officers, we'd like to see Miss Griffin.
How do I know?
Beg your pardon?
How do I know you're cop?
Here's our identification.
Land it here.
Pardon?
Pass it through the door. I want to see it good.
All right, here you are.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, your guess is as good as mine.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Hurry up. Don't let all the rain in.
Yes, ma'am.
What if I have my identification back, please?
Take your coats off right here. I don't want you tracking water through the house.
All right, could I have that identification card?
You don't mind my being so careful about what's happened here. I've got to take all precautions, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
Come on, into the sitting room.
I'll take that card, thank
you. Which one of you is Sergeant Friday?
I am.
You're the one who called.
That's right.
Who's he?
It's my partner, Frank Smith.
Uh-huh. Well, sit down. Here's your card.
Thank you.
Get you anything? Cup of coffee? Maybe some hot cocoa, hmm?
No, thank you.
Well, suit yourself. Now, what is it you want?
We understand you know Mrs. Kieran.
We're neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can tell us what happened here tonight.
Seems like you'd have the story, being cops and all.
Well, we'd like to hear you tell it, ma'am.
All right. I was here tonight watching the TV, just gone out to the kitchen to get a plate of snacks for the late show. You know, kind of like the munch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, I heard this scream real loud. I wasn't watching the television right then, so at first I thought it was from the set, you know, like a drama.
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't think nothing about it right then. Got myself all settled for the movie, and then I heard another scream. That's when I knew there was something wrong.
How's that?
There was a quiz on the television. No reason for any screams. Right then, there was another one. Then I knew it was from next door.
Yeah.
So I got my coat and umbrella and went over there.
I see.
Knocked on the door, but didn't get no answer. Well, I went into the house. All dark, not a light on. Went right in and called to Mrs. Kieran, called to her.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't answer, but I could kind of hear something off to the back of the place.
Uh-huh.
Sounded like somebody crying. Kind of like a whimper, soft.
Yeah.
It came from the back of the house in the bedroom.
You didn't see anybody else in the house when you went in, did you?
If I had, I'd have told you before this.
Go ahead, please.
I got to the bedroom and opened the door. Couldn't see anything at first.
Uh-huh.
Then I was about to go on in, and this man jumped out at me.
He was in the bedroom, was he?
Yeah, must have been hiding in the dark and heard me coming, and he got back so I wouldn't see him. Then when I opened the door, he jumped right out, almost scared me to death.
Well, what did he do? He
just jumped at me and ran out of the house, right through the front door. I heard it slam.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the crying again. It was sort of off to one side of the room. I couldn't see right away where it was coming from.
Uh-huh.
I turned on the light, and right away I saw her. She was laying on the floor.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, it was just terrible. Room was all tore up. Things all thrown around, a real mess, and her laying right there in the middle of it, all beat up. Looked like whoever done it had tried to kill her.
What'd you do then?
Called the police. Dialed O, told the operator to send a policeman. Wasn't long before they was here. It seemed like there was 100 of them all over the place.
All right, Mrs. Griffin. I wonder if you can give us a description of the man you saw.
Other officers asked me the same thing. Isn't much I can tell you. Just all of a sudden, he was there, and then he was gone.
You're pretty sure it was a man, though, huh?
Certainly. I guess I know a man when I see one. Been married to one for 22 years.
Yes, ma'am. Can you tell us anything about him?
I just got a glimpse of him. Not good. I can't tell you anything but how he looked. He was standing in the dark when I come in. Next thing I knew, he jumped past me and went out the front door.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you know him again if you saw him?
I don't think so. Just a glimpse, that's all.
Uh-huh.
Sure like to help. There isn't much more I can tell you.
All right, ma'am.
How is Mrs. Kieran? She going to be okay?
Well, she'll be in the hospital for a few days, but she's going to be all right.
Isn't she able to tell you something about the man who did this?
No, ma'am.
Seems like she'd be able to describe him. Must have been there for a good half hour.
How do you figure that?
Must have been at least that long from the time I heard the first scream till I got over there. First off, I didn't think it was real. Thought it was on television.
Yes, ma'am, you told us.
Must have been a half hour.
Mm-hmm. Now, did Mrs. Karen have any enemies that you knew of?
Well, there's some people who didn't like her. A couple right here in the neighborhood, but none of them that would do a thing like this.
How'd she and her husband seem to get along?
Well, you mean, did they have any fights?
Yes, that's right.
All the time. Seemed like they was always battling about something.
Would you know what caused the arguments?
Oh, mostly about her and other men. He thought she was running around on him. He used to fight about it. A couple of times he said if she didn't stop, he's going to kill her.
Was that true?
You mean about her and the men?
Yes.
Well, might have been. For all I know, I didn't pay much mind to their troubles. Seems like I had too many things to keep me busy without getting mixed up in their problems.
All right, Miss Griffin, we'll leave our card with you. If you remember anything you think we'd be interested in, we appreciate a call from you.
If I think of anything, you get one.
Thank you, ma'am.
Don't it seem kind of funny to you?
Well, what's that?
How Mrs. Kieran can't tell you anything about the fella? Don't that strike you kind of odd?
How do you mean?
Well, if somebody is in my house for that long, I'd be able to tell something about him. Something for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Once I guess with the lights off, maybe she couldn't see. And then again...
Yes, ma'am?
Maybe she don't want to tell you.
Frank and I drove back to the office and put in a call to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. We talked to Dr. Sebastian and found that the victim had recovered to the point where she could be moved to her own hospital. We also talked with the officers who were with her. They told us that the woman hadn't given them any new information and that they still hadn't been able to contact her husband. While I checked the crime lab, Frank went down the hall and ran the names Irene and Tom Kieran through R&I. 2:14 a.m., we met back in the squad room.
How'd it go in the crime lab?
Oh, I got it all here. You want to take a look?
Yeah.
Beginning to look like we got a good case against the husband.
Yeah?
Now, here. Here's a picture of the room. The woman was found about here. See?
Mm-hmm.
You can see the way the stuff's scattered all around the place, all through here.
Yeah. It looks like robbery.
Well, he wanted it to look that way, maybe.
What do you mean?
Well, in the dresser drawer here, the boys from the crime lab found $120 in cash. All the thief had to do was open the drawer, and he'd have seen it, too.
Oh. Well, how about the entrance?
That's something else that doesn't seem to gel. They checked all the windows and doors. There's no sign of any breaking. She must have opened the door for the thief.
Well, that means it was somebody Mrs. Kiernan knew, huh?
Yeah, it kind of looks that way.
Anything else we can use?
Well, take a look here. Here's a picture of a footprint Lee Jones found in the earth beside the path. The way it looks, the thief left the path when he ran from the house and stepped in the soft dirt.
Do us any good?
No, not much. The ground was wet. Must have been a good impression, but the rain broke down the walls. Not much good to us now.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. Leighton Prince didn't come up with anything. How'd you do?
Well, nothing on the woman. Husband's got an arrest record.
Yeah.
Got it right here. Mrs. Kieran had him pinched 18 months ago on a beating charge. Refused to prosecute. Same thing a year ago. And here, besides her complaints, he's been booked for ADW and suspicion 211.
Done any big time?
No, never drew a conviction.
Hmm.
Now, Joe, the thing I don't understand, if it was her husband, why doesn't she beef him? She wasn't worried about having him arrested before.
No.
There's something wrong about it.
Well, there's got to be an answer someplace. You tagged the stats office?
Yeah, I gave him what we had on the guy. They're going to start a run on the M.O. in the morning. Better get the rest of this information down to them.
Yeah, we can drop it off on the way out, huh?
Right.
You got that list of the husband's friends?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk to them. Maybe they can tell us where he is.
Okay.
Hot shot. I'll get it.
What is it?
Stats office is going to have to wait, I guess.
Huh?
1824 Studio Court.
Well, that's a couple of blocks from Kieran's. What's the call?
Woman slugged. We left the office and we drove over to the address, code 3. It was a small house set well back on the lot. When we got there, a felony car out of Hollywood Division had already arrived and the crime lab had been called. The victim was identified as a Mrs. Milo Hudson, age 42. An ambulance was dispatched from Hollywood Receiving Hospital and she was given first aid. She'd been beaten about the head and shoulders. As soon as the attendants had finished, Frank and I talked to her.
If you'll just tell us what happened, please.
Awful thing. Most awful thing ever happened to me.
Yes, ma'am. Did you get a good look at the man?
Pretty good. Not real good, but I did see him.
Could you describe him for us?
How do you mean?
Well, how tall was he?
I guess about as tall as you.
Be about 5'11"?
If that's how tall you are.
Yes, ma'am. How about his weight? Was he heavy or light?
About like him.
That'd be about 180, huh?
I guess so. I don't know, but I guess that's about what it is.
What about his face? Did you see that?
Yes, sir. Got a good look.
You'd know him again if you saw him, would you?
I certainly would. Never forget that face. Not if I live to be 100, I'll never forget it.
Now, could you give us a good description of him?
Had dark hair, almost black, kind of curly. Little wave right here in front.
Mm-hmm.
Had blue eyes. Dark blue, might have been kind of hazel color. Dark.
Mm-hmm. Was he clean shaven?
You mean, did he have a mustache?
Yes, ma'am.
No, didn't have anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about him that might make it easier for us to identify him?
I don't think I know what you mean.
Well, did he have any scars, any birthmarks, anything like that?
Let me think. Seems there was something, but I can't remember what.
Did this man say anything to you?
Not at first. When he came in, he didn't say a word, just pointed the gun at me and motioned back into the house, like he wanted me to get back there.
Uh-huh, but he did say something to you later, is that right?
Yes. Well, we got to the bedroom, and he started to go through the place. I told him you better get out, because my husband will be coming in any minute.
I see.
He smiled and said he knew George didn't get home till 4:30.
He used your husband's name, didn't he?
Yes. Come think of it, he did. I didn't pay much attention to it before, but he did.
Do you think you ever saw that man before?
Not that I remember.
But you're sure you'd know him if you saw him again?
I sure would. See, I remember what it was about him.
Yes?
You know, you wanted something about him that'd make it easier to tell if he was the right man?
That's right.
He had a scar. Small one right here by his eye. Made it look like his left eye was real big. Gave him a funny look.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you meant?
Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if you'd come down to the city hall and go through some pictures for us.
Well, I want to do everything I can to help. I'm supposed to check with my doctor. If he says it's all right, I'll be there. When would you want me?
Well, if you could make it in the morning.
If the doctor says it's all right, I'll be there.
Okay, thanks, Mrs. Hudson.
We can send a car for you if you like.
Might be better if you did. George likes to sleep late and I don't drive.
All right, ma'am. We'll call you in the morning.
Sure hope you can catch the person who's done this. Lord knows how many more people he's going to hurt.
Yes, ma'am.
Just seems to know all about people. When they're going to be alone and all, seems to know all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Knew right where everything in this house was all the way. Knew right down to a T.
You're sure you never saw him before, is that right?
Positive. You don't forget that kind of face. See it once and you remember it all your life.
Was there been anybody new in the neighborhood?
I don't understand what you mean.
Well, like any salesman, door-to-door canvassers, anything like that.
Residential neighborhood like this, there's always somebody around trying to sell something. Must be a couple of people a day come to the door. But I'm sure the man who hit me wasn't one of them.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Not at all, Sergeant. I want to do all I can to help you get him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea who he is, where to find him?
Not very much, Miss Hudson.
Terrible to think about it. A man like that roaming the streets. Woman isn't safe in her own home anymore.
We'll get to him, ma'am.
I should hope so. But what do we do in the meantime? Just sit here and wait for this lunatic to kick the doors down?
Well, we'll do everything we can.
Awful. I'll never forget how he came in here, shoved me around. Just never forget it.
Well, that makes you even.
What?
He won't either. We got out a supplemental broadcast carrying the description of the suspect, and then we continued to talk to the latest victim. She was unable to come up with any additional information. 4:30 a.m. The crew from the crime lab finished up their investigation, and Frank and I went back to the office. We left the description of the suspect at the stats office, and we asked R&I to check the oddity file for a possible identification on the scar that the suspect had. 5:21 a.m., we signed out of the office. The next day, at 9:26 a.m., we met with Chief Brown and Captain Donahoe, and we went over the case with them. Because of the method of operation used, it became apparent that the thief was acquainted with the habits of the people in the neighborhood. Two additional teams of men were assigned to the case, and they began to canvass the area for information on people who appeared to be loitering in the vicinity. It was also decided to assign three more police units to patrol the streets during the night hours. We checked all FI cards that had been filed in the area. That afternoon, Milo Hudson came down to the office and went through the mug books, but she was unable to make an identification. She was shown pictures of Tom Curran, the husband of the first victim, but she stated positively that he was not the man who'd beaten her. The list of possibles came back from the stats office and was checked without result. A week went by. In spite of the additional men involved, the suspect hit three more times. In each case, the M.O. was the same. In each case, he escaped. However, we were able to get a little more information on him. We had the artist and crime analysis division draw up a composite picture of the suspect, and we had it distributed to all officers in the city. The daily papers ran it on their front pages. Thursday, January 24th, 5:20 p.m. Frank and I got back to the office from dinner.
I want to call Faye and tell her it looks like a late night.
All right, I'll check the book.
Anything?
No. You call her from Pinky.
Yeah?
He and Leitner talked to that magazine salesman.
Check out?
No. The guy just got in town a couple of days ago. Description's pretty far off.
Oh.
I got it. Robbery Friday. Yes, ma'am, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, we can take it. All right. What's that address again? Yes, that's Studio Court. Yes, ma'am, we'll be right out. No, don't do anything. If he wants to leave, don't try to stop him. That's right, we'll be right there. Woman out on Studio Court.
Yeah.
Says she thinks the suspect's in her house now. Frank and I left the office and drove over to the address we'd been given on the phone. As we pulled up in front of the house, we could see a man standing on the porch. We got out of the car and we went up the walk. At the front door, we met the woman who'd called. She said that the man had rung the doorbell and had tried to force his way into the house. She went on to say that her husband wasn't home and that she'd managed to stall the man until we got there. We took him back to the city hall and talked to him in the interrogation room. He identified himself as Victor Nadell. Frank went down the hall to run him through records and identification.
A lot of trouble you guys are causing me. No reason for all this.
What were you doing at that house?
Trying to earn a living.
You have to force your way in to do that?
That old broad's off her rocker. I didn't try to get into the place.
She says you did.
She's flipped.
What do you do for a living?
I work. You know another way?
What kind of work?
Salesman.
What do you sell?
Right now I'm selling lots.
Real estate?
Yeah.
Where?
Tract out in the desert.
Who do you work for?
I don't think I'm going to tell you that. You're not going to get them in no trouble.
We're going to find out anyway. Now, why don't you save yourself a lot of grief and tell us?
You get paid, you dig it out.
You ever been arrested?
A couple of times.
Where?
Oklahoma.
What for?
Call it hijacking.
Robbery?
Same thing.
You ever do any time?
No, they couldn't nail it down.
Where do you live?
Got a room down on East 5th, room and privileges.
Who do you work for?
That's your job.
How long you been in town?
A couple of months.
You been working for this real estate company since you got here?
Yeah, I got the job a couple of days after I got off the train.
How'd you get it?
Answered an ad.
You ever see that woman out on Studio Court before?
No.
You don't know her?
I told you.
She'd have no reason to tie a bad beef on you, would she?
She's doing it, ain't she?
It's kind of silly without any reason in it.
Well, she's a woman. That's all I need.
All right, empty your pockets out on the table here.
Why?
Come on. We're not playing games here. Empty your pockets.
What's this all about? What are you guys trying to prove with all this strong
stuff? We're trying to find out why you wanted to break into that house.
I told you I didn't break into the house. That old harpy's out of her mind to tell you a thing like that. I don't know why, but she's got it in for me. Wants to see me get into trouble.
You said you didn't know her.
That's right.
You never saw her before.
That's what I said.
And why'd she build a thing like this?
I told you, I don't know. It's a lie. I walked up to the door and asked if I could talk to her. Just try to talk to her. Right away, she starts yelling at me to get away, get off the property.
Why didn't you leave then?
I wanted to make a sale.
You must have figured she wasn't interested.
I needed to make a sale. I haven't been doing too good. I had to make a sale or I'd have lost my job.
That's a reason to act like a tough guy, isn't it?
All I did was try to talk to her, talk her into buying
a lot. Well, you got a funny way of doing it.
I thought maybe she was going to call the police, make a complaint. If she'd have done that, I'd have lost my job, sure.
And that's all there is to it.
I'm telling you the truth. You got to believe me.
You've been working the neighborhood before?
No, it's the first time. I've been kind of sick the last week. It's the first time out for me. First time I've been around here.
Where'd you work before?
Westlake area.
Did you ever have any trouble there?
No, none.
Why'd you make the switch then?
Just thought I'd try a new territory, see if I could make up for the week I lost.
Mm-hmm. You got anybody who'll back up this story for you?
People at my rooming house, I'll tell you. They'll say I was there all week, some kind of flu, they'll tell you.
Joe.
Yeah.
See you in a minute.
Yeah.
You want me to wait here?
That's right. Just sit there. What do you got?
Well, looks like we nailed the wrong guy.
What do you figure?
Call just came in. Radio car picked up a fella out on Rosewood Avenue.
Yeah.
Caught him in a house trying to beat a woman to death.
How about the description?
Matches the suspect right down the line.
Victor Nadell was booked in at the main jail pending further investigation. We were unable to connect him with any robbery, but Perry Thomas of the city attorney's office issued a complaint charging violation of Section 415 of the Penal Code. At 7:46 p.m., the suspect we'd gotten a call about arrived at the city hall. He was fingerprinted and checked through R&I. We found that he'd served a year and a day in New York State for breaking and entering. He'd served a sentence in the state of Washington on similar charges. Physically, he matched the description we'd gotten from the victims. While Pinky Meade and Dee Leitner contacted the women and asked them to come down to the office, Frank and I questioned the suspect. Rudolph Marnell, is that your true name?
Yes, sir.
Where do you live?
My home's out in Hollywood.
It's a big place. Narrow it down, will you?
Ledgewood Drive, 2917.
You ever been arrested?
Yeah, you know that. It was a mistake, though.
Both times?
Well, the second time was because of the first.
What do you mean by that?
Well, once you've done time, it seems like if anything goes wrong, the cops are on your back, just like this.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us what happened out there tonight?
You mean on Rosewood?
That's right.
Big misunderstanding.
Well, you tell us about it, will you?
I wanted to use her phone. I don't know. I guess she got scared about something. All I wanted to do was make a call.
How'd you ask her?
Regular way. Told her I was in trouble. Asked if I could phone. Next thing I know, she's screaming up a storm. There's cops all around me.
According to this report, you didn't stop when you were told. Is that right?
I guess so.
Well, is it or isn't it?
Yeah.
Why'd you run?
Well, I didn't know what was going on. I got a record. I had enough to do with cops to last me the rest of my life. As soon as I heard the sirens, I took off. I guess I didn't hear that cop tell me to stop.
Yeah, kind of hard to believe.
Well, you believe the woman who says I tried to slug her. You believe her, but you don't believe me. You see, that's what I meant.
What's that?
Well, as soon as you fall once, there's a dozen cops right behind you all the time waiting to stomp on you.
You ever figure that you helped build it that way?
Well, it reads good, but you ain't got nobody on your tail.
All right. Now tell us again about tonight.
I told the cops who picked me up. I told the cop who fingerprinted me. I already told you once. Now, how many times you want to hear it?
Until we get it the right way.
Well, how are you going to know?
We'll find it. Come on. Go down to the interrogation room. Go ahead. Down this way.
Go ahead, right in there.
Sit down. All right, Marnell, now let's clean it up.
What do you mean?
You know we're going to have no trouble making you on these things. We got the victims on their way down here now. As soon as they identify you, you've had it. So save yourself a lot of time and trouble if you cop out now.
I'd like to give you a hand, Sergeant. I really would, but there's nothing I can do. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. What were you doing on January 10th?
10th?
That's right.
What day was that?
Thursday.
Gee, I don't know. It's a long time ago. It's hard to remember.
How about the 11th?
Same. I don't remember.
The 14th?
Yeah, I can tell you about that.
All right, go ahead.
I got through work and went home. Met the wife. We had dinner and took in a show.
Can you prove that?
Well, sure. Ask my wife. She'll tell you.
All right. How about Wednesday the 16th?
Blank.
You don't remember what you were doing on the 16th of January, huh?
No. Is it important?
Well, it's going to be for you.
How about the 17th?
That'd be Thursday?
That's right.
I stayed home and watched the wrestling on television.
You can prove that, can you?
Sure. Had some people in to watch the matches.
Give us their names, will you?
Yeah.
Who was wrestling that night?
Oh, you want them all or just the main?
Well, how about the semi-windup?
Let me think. Yeah, it was a tag team match between the McLean brothers and the South Twins.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
How about the 19th? What'd you do then?
19th. That would be
Saturday.
Well, I'm off Saturday. I don't remember too good. Probably came home, sat around the house, drank beer, and loafed.
Mm-hmm. That was Saturday the 19th.
Yeah, the 19th.
How about Monday the 21st?
I bowl that night.
Where?
Lane's out on Sunset.
Bowl there all the time?
Yeah.
You bowl every Monday night?
No, not every week. Usually it's on Tuesday.
Why'd you change this week?
Well, some of the guys couldn't make it Tuesday, so we changed the day.
Mm-hmm. Anything special to you about January 14th, 17th, 21st?
Now, what do you mean special?
Well, your birthday, your anniversary, something like that?
No.
Just regular days.
That's right.
Nothing to make them stand out.
No.
Then how come you can remember what you were doing on those days? You can't give us a story to fit January 10th, 11th, 16th, or 19th.
I don't know. What are you guys trying to get me to say? What are you trying to get at?
The truth.
Well, I'm giving it to you.
We can't see it.
How come you remember those days?
I don't know. I just do.
It's kind of funny. I couldn't remember what I was doing last week. I'd have to sit down and think about it.
You didn't even have to try to remember. You knew right away, didn't you?
Like it was important for you to remember.
You keep trying to build an alibi, don't you?
Look, you asked me where I was. I told you.
Let's have the names of the people you say you're with.
You going to talk to
them? That's right.
Well, maybe they won't remember.
I think they will.
But what happens if they don't?
Then you're in big trouble.
You're holding a lot of it right now.
Let's have the names.
Sure, I've got nothing to worry about. I'll give them to you.
Here's a pencil. Paper there.
I don't know all the addresses.
We'll look them up.
You're going to have to talk to them, huh?
Sure. What's the matter? You think they won't stand behind you?
No, it's not that.
Then what is it?
Well, just that they don't know I've done time. Maybe when they find out, they'll try to get me. You know, say they weren't with me, they might do that.
Yeah, like that woman tonight.
Yeah, just like that.
People don't like you much, do they, Marnell?
Hmm?
Seems like everybody's trying to get you in trouble.
I want a lawyer.
You want to check, Frank, see if the victims are here?
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen now?
Well, we got some people we want to see you.
Who are they?
The women you beat up.
No, you can't make me on those jobs.
We think we can.
Yeah, well, you just try. You take this thing into court, and they're going to throw it right out.
That's the way you got it figured, is it?
That's right.
Go ahead, Frank. Bring him in.
I said I want a lawyer.
What?
I said I want a lawyer.
Yeah, well, you'll get one.
Yeah, and a jury. I want a jury trial.
You got a choice.
You bet I have. You bring all these women down here to point me out, well, this isn't going to work. Bunch of people who don't like me, causing me trouble. People who don't like me. I want a jury trial, a judge and a jury.
All right, you'll get them. I'll make you a bet.
Hmm?
They won't like you either.
Rudolph August Marnell was filed on for 4 counts of robbery in the first degree, 5 counts of burglary in the first degree, and 5 counts of assault with intent to do great bodily injury. He was found guilty by a jury trial on all counts and received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years. Burglary in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years. Assault with intent to do great bodily harm is punishable by a term of from 1 to 20 years in the state penitentiary.
Dragnet. The story of your police force in action is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 11th, 1954. That episode, The Big Look, was translated to the television series of the same name on October 13th, 1955. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, Boston Blackie. This episode first broadcast on June 25th, 1945.
The Robson and Harmon Brewing Company, brewers of R&H beer, the beer with a barrel of quality in every glass, presents Boston Blackie, starring Richard Colmer.
We'll be right back. Blackie, it's about time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary. I left the apartment without my wallet and had to go back for it. Have you ordered?
No, I was afraid I'd have to wash dishes if it didn't show up. All I have with me is 15 cents.
But you have your smile. That should pay for the most expensive breakfast in town.
I tried it once.
Did it work?
No, I did. Washing dishes.
Well, let's see. What's good for breakfast on such a cheerful morning?
Who's cheerful?
I am.
Just because I promised to meet you for breakfast. Oh, Blackie, you're sweet.
Well, if you must know, Mary, this is why I'm cheerful.
What's that?
What does it look like?
A very lavender envelope.
With a very lavender odor about it, too.
All right, all right. Who is she?
The return address on the envelope says Ann Martin.
Old flame of yours?
Not even an old ember. She's the wife of one of Shorty's old gangster pals, Harry Martin.
Well, forgive my woman's curiosity, but why is she writing lavender letters to you?
I don't know. I haven't opened it yet. Mind if I do?
I'll mind if you don't.
Excuse me.
I will not. You're going to read that aloud.
Maybe I'd better read it in a whisper.
Oh, what does she say?
Dear Boston Blackie.
I could have guessed that much, but what does she want? Besides you.
Well, let's see. Nothing important, Mary. Just $50,000.
Well, if $50,000 is all Ann Martin wants from Blackie, she must be easy to please. But if you're hard to please when it comes to beer, then here's a friendly tip. R&H beer will suit you perfectly. And now meet Richard Calmer's Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friend.
It's very nice of you to answer my letter so soon, Blackie. I thought you would. But I didn't expect such a lovely drive in the country, too.
Your request this morning for $50,000 sort of stifled me, Anne. I thought the country air would do us good.
I guess I'd better explain.
That's not a bad idea.
I don't want you to give me $50,000. I'm talking about the money my husband put away before he went to jail. You remember my husband, don't you, Blackie?
Harry? Sure.
He liked you, Blackie. I thought he might have told you where he put that $50,000.
Which $50,000?
The money he and the gang got in that Berkeley City job. He died in prison last year, you know.
Yes, but I don't know what he did with the money, and even if that money is found, the police have a priority on it.
Well, you can't blame a girl for trying. I guess we better go back to town.
All right.
What's on the radio Saturday afternoon?
Turn it on and see.
Thanks.
No, not that one, Ann. That's my police radio. Two-way at that.
Oh, sorry.
That's which then.
Right. What are you doing with a two-way radio? Playing policeman professionally?
Oh, this radio's no joke. I bought it myself, and it comes in handy on a case every now and then.
You're becoming a regular Boy Scout, aren't you?
Oh, I really never use the thing except for laps when Faraday's men are looking for me. Then I cut in and answer them back.
Policeman's little helper, aren't you? Let me tell you something right now, Boston Blackie. If I ever find Harry's money and you go to the cops, I have friends who will take care of you.
Tell them not to bother, Anne. I can take care of myself.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Boy.
Mary, did that come out of you?
You just wait, Blackie, till you read what happens to the Hazards of Hannah.
You, bring me the Sunday papers and then sit over there and read them yourself. That's very nice of you.
I can't wait for Sunday. I like my thrills in color. Hey, you want me to read you the Hazards of Hannah?
No, thanks. I'm not hep to Hannah's hazards.
Ignorant, aren't you?
Oh, here's something not in the funny papers that may be a joker just the same, on page one.
What?
Jack Winters, Bob Talmadge, and Esther Brown are back in town after spending several years at Uncle Sam's mansion up the river.
And who are Jack Winters and so forth?
Well, I don't think you know them socially, Mary. They came from the far side of the wrong side of the tracks.
Well, then how do you happen to know them?
I've been hopping back and forth over those tracks all my life. They were pals of Harry Martin's.
And who is Harry Martin?
Before he died in jail last year, he was Ann Martin's husband.
Oh, and Ann Martin is the girl you saw yesterday who wanted you to tell her where her husband hid his $50,000.
Yes. Huh? And it's just possible that there's a connection between Ann Martin wanting to find out where her husband's money is hidden and the release of Harry's old pals.
How?
Well, Harry Martin was a pretty smart guy. He undoubtedly told just one of the three where he hid the $50,000, and I think Ann, his wife, knows he did, too.
Why do you think that?
Ann found out her husband's old pals were going to be released from prison and knew that as soon as they got to town, whichever one knew where the money was would go and get it.
Oh, I see. So she thought that maybe through you she could get to the money before the others got out of jail, huh?
Well, that's what it looks like to me. That's an angle, anyhow. Read your funnies. I'll be back soon.
Where are you going?
To see Ann again, about this new angle.
Ann Martin again, huh? You stay away from her, Blackie.
You get a kick out of the hazards of Hannah, don't you? Well, I'm getting interested in the angles of Ann.
What are you thinking about, Esther?
It's good to be out of jail, Jack. Eating real food, breathing real air.
Good. It's going to be perfect.
Maybe. Say, I wonder where Bob is.
I don't know. Where'd you go, Esther?
None of your business.
You were gone a long time.
What's that to you?
Nothing, I guess.
I wasn't gone as long as you think. I came back for a few minutes and you were out. Where were you?
Out. Doing a little asking around.
About what?
Your business is your business. My business is mine. Let's keep it that way, Esther.
Maybe we better, huh?
Yeah.
Jack, look. Look who's walking down the street.
Where?
Crossing this way, going toward the alley.
Hey, that guy looks familiar.
Yeah. It's Boston Blackie.
What's he doing down in this neighborhood?
I don't know.
We better find out, huh?
Leave the waitress a buck. Let's duck out the side way and meet him in the alley.
Okay, let's go.
I've been wanting to meet that guy down here in my territory for a long time.
Easy, Esther, easy.
Here he comes.
Easy, Esther. Don't do anything you'd be sorry for.
Shut up. Hello, Blackie.
Well, Esther Brown. I just read about your getting out of jail.
Don't reach for your gun, Blackie. There are two of us.
And Jack Winters. How unfancy meeting you here.
What are you doing down here, Blackie?
Oh, just looking around.
For trouble, maybe?
You know I don't have to look for trouble, Jack. Trouble comes to me.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. Have you been up to see Ann Martin yet?
No. Why should we?
He knows why we might, Esther. That means he knows too much.
No, not yet. But I'm going up to see Ann and find out what there is to know.
I don't think you ought to.
I didn't ask for your advice.
Then maybe we ought to fix you so you won't need it.
You swing fast, Jack, but not hard enough. Well... Jack won't wake up for a while, I guess. I seem to have a lullaby left hand. And now I think I can go and see Ann without interference. Ann? Ann, open up. Hello, Anna. Faraday.
Hello, Blackie, old pal. Come in.
Why, thanks, but... Hey, now, wait a minute. What's the gag? Is there a body in there?
Why don't you come in and see?
What? And I have to go through a long routine to get away from you? Oh, no. So long, fella.
All right, Blackie. Stay where you are.
It's that man again with that gun again.
And it's you again with a body again. Get in here. And you better make up your story. You're going to need a good one.
Awfully quiet in here, Faraday. Is this a murder scene? How could it be, with no photographers, fingerprint men, or the coroner?
They're gone.
And where's the body?
It's gone, too.
I've missed all the fun, haven't I? How was she killed?
How did you know it was a she?
A she lived here, didn't she?
I found bodies in your apartment that weren't yours.
Good point, Inspector. One of these days, maybe it will be my body. Then what are you going to do to keep your job on the force?
I'll worry about that happy day when it comes.
Faraday, are you really putting your gun away?
Yeah, what about it?
Don't tell me you're going to admit that sometime, somewhere, there's a murder I didn't commit.
You listen to me, Blackie. I put my gun away because just once I want to see what kind of a man you are. My gun seems to make you want to try to get away.
try, Inspector?
All right, all right. When I pull my gun on you, you always escape. Well, maybe this time, with my gun put away, we can talk this thing out and no tricks.
I hate to spoil your fun, Inspector, but this is one time I have no intention of running from you.
Yeah? Why?
Oh, well, I'm just tired of it. What happens when I duck you? I not only have to avoid every cop in town, but I have to solve the case for you to clear myself. No, that's too much trouble.
Well, at last you're coming to your senses.
What are you coming to, Faraday?
The reason you killed Ann Martin.
Did you find it out all by yourself?
Oh, it didn't take much to find out. You saw Ann Martin yesterday afternoon. The whole neighborhood was talking about that car of yours.
What should I have done to pick Ann Martin up? Driven down in a coal truck?
Then you admit you saw her yesterday afternoon.
I admit, Faraday. Yesterday afternoon from 2 o'clock until about 5:30.
All right, that's fine.
It now comes under the heading of so what in my book. She was alive then.
We've already established the time of death between the hours of 8 p.m. and 12 midnight Saturday.
Then I suppose if I tell you exactly what I was doing in that time, you'll let me go and the fun will be over.
Oh, no, Blackie. You don't get out of this, not even with a perfect alibi, 10 witnesses and 37 affidavits.
My, but you sound convincing. But I'm sorry, Faraday, I didn't kill Ann Martin.
Who did?
I don't know, but give me 24 hours this side of the bars, and I'll not only get your killer for you, but the $50,000 Harry Martin stole before he went to jail. You are still looking for it. I happen to know that.
What's the gag, Blackie?
Gag?
What's the idea of asking for 24 hours? You usually take it.
Only when you have a gun on me.
Okay, Blackie, get out of here. But I'm holding you to those 24 hours. You won't get 1 minute more. Now beat it before I change my mind.
You mean you don't think I could get away from you if I wanted to?
No, I'm letting you go. Now, if you'd made one false move while we were talking, I'd have shot you in your tracks. Now get out of here.
You would have shot me, huh? Oh, Faraday, catch.
Whatever it is, I don't want it.
I think you can use it, Faraday. It's your gun.
Ann Martin, wife of a dead gangster, arranged a meeting with Blackie to find out from him if he knew the whereabouts of $50,000 hidden by her husband Harry before he went to prison. Blackie didn't know. Next day, Blackie noticed in the newspaper that Harry Martin's gangster pals had just been released from jail and realized that Ann Martin came to him for information about the missing money in hopes that she could get it before Harry's old friends. Following this lead, Blackie went to Ann Martin's apartment to be informed by Inspector Faraday that she had been murdered. Faraday gave Blackie 24 hours to clear himself of implication in Ann Martin's death. And as we return to our story, it's early the next morning, and Faraday's been chasing Blackie in a police car.
Blackie, Inspector Faraday's car just turned the corner.
Fine guy, that Faraday. He promises to leave me alone for 24 hours, and I have to waste half that time hiding from him in doorways. We better move, Mary. He might come back.
Yes, that's right. Where are we going?
You're going home. I'm going to follow that lead we got from Shorty.
You think you ought to go down in that neighborhood alone?
I'd rather go down there alone and have people stare at me than for us to go down there together and have people whistle at you.
Well, I'm the one that should mind.
Well, the trouble with you is you don't mind. You turn around and say thank you.
What's wrong with that? It's part of a woman's job to make herself attractive to men.
Job, I get it. They whistle while you work. All right. You go home and be a nice little girl while I run back down to the riverfront and pretend I'm a bad little boy.
How's the jaw, Jack?
Quit worrying about it, Bob. It's okay.
I tell you, Jack, you shouldn't have swung on Blackie like that. He can give us trouble.
Hello, boys.
Oh, hi, Esther.
Hi.
Okay. Now that I'm here, let's get down to business.
Well,
don't mind me. I want to hear this.
Blackie.
Well, Bob Talmadge and Jack Winters, too. Isn't this cozy?
What do you want?
You remember Harry Martin, don't you, Esther?
Sure, but so what? He died in jail a year ago.
But he had a wife. You know, our friend Ann Martin.
Maybe that's what killed him.
Then what killed his wife?
Grief, probably. Maybe she's a late mourner.
Ann Martin's dead?
As of last night, Jack.
She'll get used to it after a while.
Now, which one of you killed her?
Ain't any of us seen Ann Martin since we got back.
I doubt that. But I'm going to give all three of you a break. Ann Martin was killed Saturday night between the hours of 8 p.m. and midnight. Now, let's have your alibis. All right, Jack. Where were you Saturday night between the hours of 8 p.m. and midnight?
I went to Westfield to see some friends. Bud Thomas and his wife. They weren't home, so I come back.
Very convenient of them. All right. You, Wester. Where were you?
I was up at 191st Street in the park.
Doing what? Ducking squirrels?
I was there at 9. It takes a long time to get back and forth. A horse ran away just about the time I got there.
That's easily checked. How about you, Bob?
I was to the movies at 86th and River Road.
What was showing?
A double feature. The Call of Africa, and believe me not, there was a newsreel and a cartoon.
What was in the newsreel?
Well, the usual stuff. A launching, some new styles and hats, new inventions, some pictures of the president.
You got our alibis. We weren't near Ann when she got killed. Now beat it, will you?
Sure, I'll beat it. But there'll be a murder rap against one of you for killing Ann Martin. And you'll have to beat that.
Thank you very much. Goodbye. Well, that's the last of the phone calls, Blackie. Bob Talmadge's alibi is solid, too. The movie theater said they showed a double feature and a newsreel last night.
Well, all three of our suspects seem to be in the clear, don't they?
Blackie, is this going to be one of those murders where you almost begin to think you did it?
No, Mary. I think I know who killed Ann Martin.
What?
But I promised Faraday the $50,000, too. And the killer has to lead me to the money.
Well, what are you doing in my office, Blackie? Have you come to admit you killed Ann Martin?
No, Inspector Faraday. I wouldn't make you that happy.
Well, 2 hours from now, I'm going to make myself happy. I'm going to lock you up. Ha ha.
You're a regular clock watcher, aren't you, Faraday? No wonder you never accomplish anything. Why, you could be on the pot on the trail of a killer and quit at the 5 o'clock whistle.
I'm quitting on you at the end of 24 hours. That's all I promised you. And you got just 2 hours left.
I came down here to ask for more time, Faraday.
Nothing doing.
Oh, but plenty's doing. I know you're a killer.
Then why do you need more time?
Well, I want to get that $50,000 for you, too.
2 hours is all you get. And if you don't have this thing solved by that time, you'll get the rest of your life.
Blackie.
Let him in, Jack.
Okay. I don't know why we have any truck with this bum, Esther.
Shut up, Bob.
Come in.
Thanks.
Now what do you want, Blackie?
I want to make a deal.
What do you mean, deal?
One of you knows where Harry Martin hid his money. Whoever knows that is the one who killed Ann, too. Now, I know who that is. I'd like to share that $50,000. I'd like a share of it to keep my mouth shut.
Oh, well, now ain't that nice.
Isn't it worth it to the killer to spend $25,000 and go free? And just so there won't be any double-crossing, I'll meet Ann's killer at the old mill on Mill Creek Road at 11 o'clock tonight. Then if the killer will lead me to Harry Martin's $50,000, I'll take half the money and forget the whole thing. I hope Ann's killer is smart enough to tell time. I said 11 o'clock, and I don't like to wait, even for 25,000 bucks.
Well, do we have to sit here and stare at each other? He may not know anything.
Yeah, sure, that's what I think. He's bluffing.
Look, all we got to do is stick together, and he won't be able to do anything to any of us. That is, if one of us did kill Ann Martin.
Hey, I just remembered. I got to go meet some fellas.
Funny time to remember, Jack.
I'll see you later. So long. What time is it, Esther?
9 o'clock.
Oh.
Oh, that reminds me.
Hey, where are you going?
I got an appointment, too.
Well, ain't that pretty? All of a sudden, everybody has to go someplace.
I won't be gone long.
Stick together, she said. They don't wait 2 minutes before they leave me stuck.
Here, I'll say you killed Ann Martin.
You said you'd meet your killer here.
And you'd like to meet him, too, wouldn't you, Esther?
Sure. Wouldn't you? I want to know where that dough is.
Maybe this is your answer coming up the path.
It's Jack. He killed Ann. And he knows where the money is.
Does he?
Hey, Blackie. Guess you disfigure this means that... Esther, what are you doing here?
She's here for the same reason you are, Jack. To hear the killer tell me where the money is.
Bob killed Ann?
I didn't say that. It could have been you.
I think you're bluffing, Blackie.
I know he is.
Shh, here comes Bob.
Hey, Blackie.
Here, Bob.
Okay, Blackie. Prove to me that I...
Hello, Bob.
We figure to split that money three ways, Bob. What are you two doing here?
Everybody wants a piece of that $50,000, Bob.
I don't know where it is.
All right, Bob. Unless you pay your way out of this jam, you'll have to pay for killing Ann Martin.
What makes you think I killed her?
Your alibi had a hole in it, Bob.
I told you what movie I went to. If you check, you'd know those pictures were playing there Saturday night.
But you said you saw a cartoon.
Yeah, I did.
Not Saturday night, Bob. Maybe you've been in jail too long to know this, but on Saturday night, movie houses throw out the cartoon to get in the extra late show.
I tell you, I was there.
I know you killed Ann Martin, Bob. But, my deal still goes.
You want... $25,000 to Harry's $50,000, huh?
You want to talk it over with your pals?
I want to talk it over plenty.
Me too.
All right. Go over there. Get in my car. Talk in privacy all you want. I'll wait here till you come to a decision.
Come on, Bob.
Okay.
Get in. Both of you.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. And spill to us, Bob. Does Blackie have the right dope on you?
Go ahead, Bob. We can beat this rap together.
Did you kill her?
Yeah.
What'd she try to do? Hone in on Harry's dough?
Yeah, she said she knew where it was, and unless I'd split it with a 50-50, she'd go to the cops about it. Maybe she was lying, but I couldn't take any chances.
Then you knew all the time where the dough was. You were going to get it without telling
her. Shut up, Jack. Bob's the only one of us who knows where the dough is.
I'm going to give Blackie half the money to let me go.
No, you're not. Going out there and let Blackie have a little lead poisoning. We've all got guns. Now, where's the money, Bob?
Where is it, Bob? Okay, take your hands off me.
Come on, where is it?
It's in a box buried in the Alton Cemetery near the first big tree off the road.
Okay.
Okay is right. We split the dough three ways.
We don't cut Blackie in?
We cut Blackie down. Come on. Don't pull your guns till you're right on him. He's pretty good with a gun himself.
Well, so the conference is over. What goes?
You do. Let him have it, boys.
Okay, Blackie, you're through. I'm going to play. Hey, where's my gun? I don't have my gun.
I don't have mine.
Your guns? Oh, I forgot to tell you. I have them.
Why, you...
There's still three of us against one. Let's get him.
Don't move any of you.
What are you so tough about? So you have a gun. What good's it going to do you to kill us?
I don't want to kill you. I want to preserve you for Faraday.
You can't turn us over to the cops either. Maybe you know which one of us killed Ann Martin, but you don't know what you really want to know.
You don't know where the money is.
Oh, but I do. I listen to you.
You got a big mouth, not big ears.
I forget what size ears I wear, but I heard every word you said. If you look inside the millhouse doorway here, you'll see my portable radio set.
So what?
There's a two-way shortwave radio in my car. The microphone was on. I tuned you in on this radio set and heard every word you said. The money is buried in the Alton Cemetery.
Pretty smart, aren't you, Blackie?
I'll take that compliment slowly, Esler. But I think I'd better take you down to headquarters in a hurry. My 24 hours are more than up, and Faraday's the fretful type. Oh, Mary, it's about time.
I'm sorry, Blackie. I missed my bus, and another one didn't come along for 15 minutes. Have you ordered yet?
No, I was afraid I'd have to wash dishes if you didn't show up. All I have here is 15 cents.
Oh.
Oh, that makes you happy.
Oh, no. This is what makes me happy.
Letter from a boyfriend?
It's from a man, yes. You jealous?
No.
Aren't you the least bit jealous?
No.
Well, aren't you joking?
Yes.
Oh, that's better.
What's he want?
Oh, nothing much, just $100.
$100?
Isn't that awful?
What kind of men do you know writing you for money?
Oh, he's not a bad sort.
Not bad, he's criminal. What's the 100 for, blackmail?
No, black suit. The man's my tailor.
Oh.
Oh.
Thanks, Blackie. We'll all accept that invitation for next Monday night over WOR at 8:30 for the further adventures of Boston Blackie, presented by the brewers of that famed R&H Staten Island Beer and Ale, who remind you that to help keep supplies flowing smoothly, please return all empty bottles and cases to your dealer promptly. You can see Boston Blackie's latest Columbia picture, Boston Blackie Booked on Suspicion, starring Chester Morris, at your favorite motion picture theater. As the war against the Japs increases in fury, our fighting men must have more and more precious supplies. We can help meet this urgent need by saving waste kitchen fats. Just one teaspoonful will make enough sulfadiazine to treat 35 wounded men. 1 pound will help make 150 machine gun bullets. And there are hundreds of other war uses for salvaged fats. So keep saving all your used fats and turn them over to your butcher. He'll give you 2 red points for every pound. This is Larry Elliott saying good night and good cheer with good R&H beer. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Boston Blackie, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of June, 1945, wrapping up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.